management practice and stuff like that, and like talking about like, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird how much I think maybe some of the, I mean, a lot of the stuff that comes out of anarchism as like a relational or like collective organizing methodology, I think gets distributed into these kind of like either like NGO or nonprofit kind of spaces that are, you know, they are businesses. They function on some level of commerce, even though it's like rendering services for philanthropic stuff as revenue, like philanthropic donations or like grant funding or some amount of funding as their revenue stream that they use to then offer some kind of like product or care or service and stuff.
Community space.
I mean, a lot of things, yeah. But yeah, it's weird. The like Ari Weinzig thing, the like Zingerman's thing is just like a very like 90s, like, you know, like global cafe kind of, you know, like global cafe kind of woodcut coffee cup and like grains and like a loaf of bread kind of wall art sort of pastiche that I think it comes a lot out of the kind of moment that, you know, the like Zapatistas were kind of coming out of as like not out of like their moment, but like the kind of like weird moment of like subcultural popularity that like the Zapatistas kind of had within like how they became very fashionable and stuff, and I think that informed it on like some levels that I don't think the Zapatistas would be particularly thrilled with or like, you know, probably are like, yeah, that shit got fucking like co-opted pretty quick or, you know, got away from them. But like, yeah, I mean, I think like a lot of stuff gets brought out of anarchism as like a strategy for like anarchism as like basically what like a set of values that like posits remaking society through acts of creative destruction and stuff like the stuff that feels a little more at home and just like kind of evenly distributing like doing good works into the hands of like horizontal actors and giving those actors agency to like make empowered decisions, kind of, I feel like fits in line with some kind of corporate re-envisioning of like anarchist principles or whatever. I don't know. Anarchist businesses always look like a couple things, and they're usually like some form of like bookstore and coffee shop, which is a fairly obvious one, I would say. I mean, they work well as that kind of space. But yeah, they're tough. Like, I feel like the one that we participate in has been around for a very long time, partially because it functions entirely off like volunteer labor and like subsidizes and pays for itself largely through you know, selling books or like other merchandise sort of things, and not really through anything regarding like not really through anything like food service or space rental or stuff like that.
Yeah, I think the thing is that books and, I mean, well, as we both know, the profit margin on books isn't amazing, but and the profit margin on food service is okay-ish. I think these things tend to be the only other spaces that I think that I would know as like explicit anarchist co-ops or are something that a friend of mine has mentioned and that I've seen in other cities where it's like a space that somebody like pays the rent on a building and tries to build maybe a little library within it, and then begs for donations and tries to make it the People's XYZ Community Center or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's
a few of those around, like, this region of the country, I would say. And they do it to a better extent than some others, too. Like, some do a much better job and some kind of flounder.
Yeah.
I think it would make me incredibly nervous to, like... I personally really do like the bookstore model, but my biases are largely, like... Unlike doing anything with food, I think the margins are actually a lot better with, like, selling books, because you don't have to worry about, like...
Spoilage training, certification.
And yeah, a lot of overhead costs are like kind of constant costs that go towards maintaining of things. Like books will never really expire per se. And the markup that you get from most major distributors does allow you to buy things, you know, at a wholesale rate that's like usually at least 40%. Discount, like publishers, like the anarchist publishers, like PM and AK and Little Black Card, all offer everything to most people around 50% off. And like, you know, that's pretty good. It's like for every one book you sell, you've basically subsidized two more books at the same price. And like, that's a pretty sustainable way, like, because then you can just like kind of meet your expenses and run it off the volunteer labor of like a fairly nebulous group of people who just basically need to be a body in the space and stuff. I feel like you're allowed to, I don't know, I feel like when you're selling books as an organ of like a propagandistic project, you don't have to like, you can willingly kind of challenge people a little bit with like what you carry, or you can like curate your selection in such a way where like it doesn't have to be like when things market themselves so explicitly as community spaces, which it kind of seems like, you know, the Blackbird space that we were talking about does, and like some other spaces that I look up to a lot, but they ingrain themselves really, really heavily into the community, but as such, then they have to adopt all the kind of like most cutting edge progressive policies of the community and like invest deeply in the kind of comings and goings of the community and its like internal kind of strife and stuff like that in a way that I think makes navigating the kind of weird interpersonal type things of, or like intracommunal things within those kind of spaces, like so much harder than just like the, you know, you can just be a bookstore and sell the books, and like, as long as you're not like seen as, you know, an actively antagonistically like evil project or something, you haven't like alienated, like you don't risk alienating your space from like its patrons, you know, it's like the people who are its patrons on like a financial sense.
Right, that's actually something that I have enjoyed about the bookstore project, is that because it functions as a business and isn't this sort of nebulous, as we said, tied to, you know, the activist community drama and whatever is the activist community buzzword of the day, we are part of our neighborhood and in a space where a lot of people who wouldn't necessarily, who aren't anarchists and aren't politically radical at all, are coming through and still hanging out, being in the space. I'm trying not to say space a bazillion times, but, you know, it is then a little bit of a neighborhood fixture in a way that I find actually more politically interesting, just in terms of interacting with people who don't share your stated values
right.
as much in that way. And I think, like, we've made the point plenty of times in these discussions that your average, like, liberal, gooey, we're a community space, we are for inclusion, and we want to see, serve the needs of the community, is not something that's just close to anarchist values. So,
I mean, yeah, it's tough, because I feel like, I mean, okay, so, like, cards on the table, too. In my, like, day job, I work in, you know, a lot, like, a public library-type institution. And that is very much, like, adopting, you know, now that, like, libraries are no longer kind of, like, seen as these kind of... It's not a university library, so it's not really seen as this space of, like, heavily, like, heavy, intense research. Libraries definitely are shifted very fully into meeting the needs as, like, kind of a community space and community hub stuff. And the sort of, like, I feel like the bookstore project that I work on is sometimes a little bit of a respite from, like, having to be... I mean, I'm a decent person to everybody in, like, both spaces and stuff, but, like, I wouldn't say that I, like, always feel like the bookstore project has to be the bleeding edge of, like, community health or harm reduction initiatives or things, as long as we're, like, meeting some amount of, like, need for people personally, as, you know, not, like, actively restricting things. I mean, there's, like, very easy small things you can do, and then there's things that it's, like... You know, we're not going to be like a safe injection site sort of thing at the bookstore because we don't have anything close to the infrastructure that would require even like a larger institution than ours to really rack their brains to figure out how to have these kind of like, you know, resources present or like...
One thing I've noticed is that when you hold a space like a bookstore or, I don't know, whatever else you would hold, there's a certain like type of person or organization that will seize upon that and try to expand it either by joining and pushing their own personal projects, or maybe it's like a different type of mutual aid or whatever type of group that'll decide, okay, well, there is a space that nominally shares our politics, and they call, so they obviously are going to be able to do what we want to do, which is set up a like a safe injection site or set up a community fridge or set up XYZ project, offer free childcare. Nobody's tried to do that yet, but I think it could be
It comes and goes from all of those things have come and gone from the project that we are both a part of. Most of them have never happened. So
in part because there is obvious spatial and economic constraints that I think a successful project has to be aware of. There's certainly nothing wrong with trying to be a community fridge or a safe injection site or a daycare facility or God knows what else.
Daycare facility just makes me so nervous.
I think it's actually great. I really want a bunch of people who like Summit Hop to watch my hypothetical toddler. I think that would be so sick.
Yeah.
but, like, whatever it is, there's often this sense of, it just, well, it should work, and we want these things to happen, so obviously this project that already exists can easily expand to take them on, and when you're part of a successful project, one of the things you realize is you kind of do have to keep your scope narrow.
Mm-hmm.
Because you kind of can't do all that.
Yeah. I mean, I think keeping our, like, the scope of the project that we work on narrow is, like, kind of one of our saving graces. Like, I know that there was, like, there used to be a little bit more in line with, like, food and stuff that they offered, which I think was just kind of a barrier for a lot of people to, like, being able to perform consistent service, like,
mm-hmm.
from shift to shift, like, because a lot of people were like, I'm not really interested in making soup or, like, roasting coffee beans or things like that. I just want to kind of hang out here and sell the books, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, no one quite, like, I think it's cool that we're a space that just has drip coffee and tea. I think it's boho and chic and tastes good, and we don't have to worry about things that are, like, more complicated or expensive or, you know,
require specialized training, like making food, which also would require safe serve certifications and various mm-hmm. amounts of, like, cleanliness standards, which some anarchist bookstores could deal or do with trying to meet.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think we have at least 3 safe serve certified people at our collective currently, though. I know I'm one of them.
I think that's just because we attract, every anarchist project attracts, like, disaffected former or current food service people.
Yeah, definitely.
But
yeah. No, it's funny. I am Save Surf certified until 2028, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think keeping that scope narrow, like, I don't want to, like, armchair QB the space in the Hudson Valley, because I don't really know, like, a lot of its financials, mm-hmm. of course. It sounds like it did want to do the thing of, like, we're a coffee shop, which, low-key, like, coffee is, like, a pretty low, you have to really sell a fuckload of coffee to make ends meet. And, you have to really be, like, one of the most successful coffee shops I know that is not, like, bankrolled by, like, wealthy, wealthy people is, like, a roaster that buys in bulk and roasts their own beans, so they keep their profit margin kind of slim for that, and then is open, like, 364 days of the year for 12 hours a day, like, clockwork, without fail, and has a ton of space for people to sit at. And it's, I mean, I'm sure there's a decent amount of, like, investment money that goes into it from the people who, you know, own it, but, you know, they're there working at 7 in the morning every morning, and, like, they're making ends meet, and they have a lot of wholesale work that they do with, like, various other people who buy their product and stuff, but, like, it's hard to make ends meet and keep a space running and pay, like, pay a rent that's, in most major cities, like, you can't get, like, a commercial space for rent under, like, I don't know what, maybe at least $1,000 a month, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, that's at least 500 cups of coffee a month to even just make rent. That's a lot of fucking coffee if you're not, like, really positioned well to be catching a ton of business. So, like, yeah, you kind of got to rely on the benevolence of the people who come in and do your various kind of social programming or mutual aid or stuff like that. And unless you are very much willing to court the kind of crowd that has, like, access to, like, grant money or stuff, or is, like, kind of well off progressives.
Yeah.
You are probably looking at a fairly downwardly mobile, like, kind of people who I think need more help than they can potentially contribute to a lot of products often, or projects rather, contribute.
I think that's often one of the interesting things about the economics of the project. I think, like, Left Bank Books in Seattle is a spin-off or a split from, I don't know, maybe one of their, like, collective members will, like, listen to this and be like, this is so fucking wrong. But they're a split from an earlier anarchist bookstore that Seattle managed to sustain for, like, quite some time, at least these two, and they have other radical bookstore types of places, but Left Bank has been around for like 40 something years, and that's in a really expensive space, but they probably do that in part by being such a institution and being a really eclectic bookstore on top of a radical space in a city that's got a reputation for eclectic bookstores.
I've only been in there once a few years ago, but do they have space that isn't book sale area?
It's mostly, it is all books, but it is, there are like places to read. It's about, I think, two stories. And they do sell things other than books. I don't know how much they use it as a performance space. Because I haven't spent a ton of time there, but it would be difficult, but I've seen performances held in small spaces.
Sure. So yeah. I think it just really, yeah, it's, it, it performs its function, I think, as a place to buy books in a very busy, kind of touristy, very busy, like, shopping district, as like an eclectic cozy bookstore. And they've been around, I mean, like Wooden Shoe is kind of very similar in that sense. They're just a bookstore that's been around forever.
I wouldn't know. Wooden Shoe is never staffed the times I'm in Philadelphia.
Oh my god,
maybe their collective members are listening to this.
Some might be. I'm not sure. Like, I know one criticism that gets lobbied at both of those places is that they're owned by a small group of people, and then there are, like, staffers, basically. Like, kind of staffers who, like, staff, and then I think there's some level of, like, tiered structure of, like, whether you're, like, a member owner or just kind of a contributor or something in terms of your input to the project. The one that we fuck around with is formally horizontal, and like there are people whose like names are on taxes or like leases and stuff like that, but it doesn't confer like status within the collective as much as the actual kind of work people are willing to put on the line for it, and like that does form often, I think, like kind of informal hierarchies in some way. Being self-aware about it, but
I think we both definitely know that it forms internal hierarchies, and there are actually, I'm not even, I guess in our defense, they might be less hierarchies and more just cliques.
Cliques?
A little bit. I mean, there is no human project, I think, that couldn't that has no aspect of like cult of personality and some people having more friends or more popularity for whatever reason, and kind of getting to exert their will, you know, in a way that other people don't, and that's often or sometimes harmful to the project as a whole. But I don't know. It is non-hierarchical.
Oh, you know what we were thinking about a little while ago. Remember? So I mean, there's also the whole thing with like Blue Stockings in New York being turbulent, from what it seems like.
And, yeah, I was. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was actually meant to get there with my comment about Left Bank, which is just an amazing, cozy little spot. But that's got to be expensive. And yet, our project and similar projects that I've sort of been around have often been in lower cost of living. I forget what the term is for them, but like mid-size or mid-tier cities where you can kind of sustain a project a little bit cheaper. So I think some of the differences in how other projects go are probably very much economic, and I'm sure that has something to do with Blue Stockings and their demise, because they were renting space in like
Manhattan.
I forget where in New York. Yeah, like that's got to be just insane.
There was, I mean, their rent was disgusting. I think, I mean, they were, I think they were being very much like kind of pushed out by their landlords, and I know that there is some amount of talk that their decision to like be kind of welcoming to their like local homeless and like their like local homeless population definitely contributed to the hostility that the rest of the neighborhood, I think, conspired a little bit with whatever forces to kind of force them out of their space. I mean, they also carried, from what I saw and like what they were saying in their, you know, kind of fundraising or announcements and stuff, that they were carrying something like, was it something like $100,000 in like publisher debts, which is
insane. And I don't know how you get to that point.
I mean, I owe Little Black Cart like $1,500, and I fucking stay up at fucking shaking in bed about it, thinking of what they're going to do to me.
They're going to come and break your kneecaps. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah. But, like,
you will be attacked by somebody who will just, like, fling copies of, what are those zines? The enemy combatants at you.
Yes.
No.
But no, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're also thinking about anarchist businesses and the kind of idea of like a physical space. And I think it's a because people like a physical space because it anchors people as like some kind of third space, whether that's like a purely commerce kind of third space, like a, you know, some kind of cafe or bookstore is, or, you know, it's a, you know, community space. But I mean, there are plenty of, I think, anarchist businesses that are just distros, be they small selling photocopied zines on Venmo kind of businesses, quote unquote, or something, you know, with a lot of infrastructure, or publishers, you know, our businesses and stuff. And I don't know. I think obviously all of that kind of relates to these ideas of like space and propaganda. And can you, do you think, I mean, like, cooperatives operate often in food service, and, like, I will say some of that was ideological, like, food buyer co-ops, trying to be part of, like, kind of, you know, redistributing food through buyers clubs, for specifically, like, kind of healthier food and stuff, and then, like, kind of more public, like feeding the public kind of initiatives through cooperative systems. And like that sort of like food project has always attracted some kind of amounts of like more horizontalized ownership and management structures. And that's a very present thing in a lot of cities, especially a lot of like, you know, like you can find food co-ops in probably pretty much every state, and
probably any mid-sized city.
And some of them are definitely more like member-owner co-ops that have like a kind of internalized and antagonistic like labor relationship these days. And that's coming out a lot more. I will say, and like the kind of co-op food space movements, is that member owners and like management represent a level of investment that often, runs a business in the same way that any capitalist, like that any other like non-horizontally or cooperatively organized capitalist entity like runs a business, and as such like functions on some of the, kind of I mean, functions basically, on the labor of its employees, and those employees often seek to advocate for themselves and like gain space on those kind of cooperative boards. And I know that's there's been what was it on? Is it on Final Straw, I think? They were interviewing like members of like a cooperative, like a unionized labor force within the food co-op structure in like a city. Specifically, this union too, I think, does a lot with BDS campaigns to try and keep them from like to try and keep their buyers from specifically buying products that are being manufactured in Israel. But yeah, that was I think that was a week or t a couple weeks ago, maybe on the Final Straw Radio. I think there was also what's that other? Oh God, what's that other radio show that's oh, The Dig. It was also on The Dig. They were on both The Dig and Final Straw. The kind of very, I would say, like kind of Marxist slash anarchist kind of collectivized union workers within those co-ops that were like representing the interests of the workers in those kind of worker food co-ops. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know how you would make a project like that was explicitly, if you wanted it to be, that was more explicitly, I don't know what you'd even say, because you're the moment, we operate partly as a business, so we do have some business, so we have some business constraints, like making enough money to pay the rent, what sort of books get stocked, just generalized stuff like that. But because it is volunteer based, there is not some like the there isn't really a profit motive as strongly. We just need to kind of break even and hopefully do a little better than that each month. But these worker owner co-ops, I'm gonna say I grew up in a town where I actually benefited greatly from having access to cheap and hippie nutritious food, without that I would not have been able to had my parents bought by for me if it wasn't for those places. But when you're running a business and you're trying to sort of smack on this anarchist model, you are still running a business, and it feels like you'll inherently have the tensions between labor and management and whatever that any business would have. And maybe just, I don't know, you could build that into your foundational setup somehow, but I think it's just inherent that that's going to happen.
I think it's like it's sorry. I think it's fairly inevitable that one would find themselves in that kind of situation where, you are, for better or worse, participating in the economy and like have to offer a product conscious to the kind of, rules of the like rules of economics and stuff, and that's obviously going to put you in a position where you have to make an amount of compromise if you are, I mean, Yeah, I mean, we run entirely on volunteer labor. We kind of skirt that issue, but the fact is we just, no one gets paid for their labor, and that's fine if because we're all volunteers. You also can't expect too much out of any people because of that or hold them accountable except for like interpersonal emotional accountability. Like people can do as shitty of a job as they want, basically, within the collective, and all you can really do is just kind of emotionally terrorize them for being shitty at their job. And that's not me. I don't do that. But that's
No, I
really,
do that.
I know you do. But no,
No, I don't.
that's literally the only thing you can do because you can't actually hold someone accountable
I don't
for
know.
their performance. I mean,
Not for performance, but I think no, I think we actually function very reasonably well on this model because people have other shit to do with their time if they're not excited. Like, one of the things that kind of sustains our project and I think makes it work, is that people do have better shit to do with their time. And we also don't offer a lot of social capital unless I'm completely off on this and there's somebody going around, oh, yeah, I'm a collective member at this info shop. That you don't get a whole lot of out of it.
Did I
So.
ever tell you about the one time I happened upon somebody were doing doing a panel as like part of our collective, and they didn't tell anybody about it, and they like did this like panel and spoke for this panel without like telling anyone about it. I think
I
that's
feel like,
it was weird.
how desperate were the organizers to get somebody on their panel? And I've seen some really lame panels.
I don't
Like.
know. It happened at least a couple times with the same person that I saw them in a few different contexts, just kind of like speaking for the collective and like stuff without like actually telling anyone that they were doing it. And it was really weird. I was like, why does this keep happening? Why do I keep finding this kind of shit? Because it was like, one was like in the shop, like one was like an event hosted in our store that they didn't tell anyone about. It was really funny because I was there, going, well, I'm not leaving. I have work to do, so I hung
That's
out just to be fucking obstinate. But I'm also not a
feels
very nice
terribly
person.
embarrassing.
It was pretty embarrassing. I was pretty embarrassed for them. I'm not gonna lie. But yeah, no, I'm a bad person. Maybe
No, I
that's the
don't
issue.
think so. I think the issue might be that we don't shame people for this sort of behavior enough, and then you can go around with nobody telling you, you look like a major dweeb for this. You do know that, right? No, nobody wants to see your panel about, like, oh, I come in the morning, I make the coffee, the guy who lives down the street comes in and, like, makes chit chat. Like, whatever.
Yeah, the example from the example of the people from like Tokyo, the collective was interesting because it sounds like they don't necessarily like have, I mean, it sounds like they do like kind of political art stuff within their gallery, and it is kind of a third space sort of thing, but it's not specifically bound to like anarchist content or propagandistic content that they offer, or a product that is propagandistic per se. That the anarchist part of that project comes from how it's organized and the way that they make decisions. And I'm wondering, if there was like, I don't know, say it was like a farm or something, or say it was like, let's say it was, like a farmer's market, like a market garden sort of thing that ran on anarchist principles and like confederated itself and its members to do various projects, but like ran as like a functioning, small farm that sold its output, whether it be like vegetables or honey or whatever the hell, flowers, stuff like that. But it was like anarchistically organized and horizontally organized. I mean, that would be kind of an anarchist business, is, you know, and you know, I'm sure it could be like, yeah, we sell these things and then seconds all get donated to like the Food Not Bombs chapter or whatever. And this is like kind of how this functions. It's like, it does an anarchist business. I mean, obviously like the whole idea of a business being anarchist is already enough of an oxymoron. Like, does it necessarily matter that the product that anarchist businesses sell is not necessarily anarchy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I actually, I think that grounds you and makes, and I mean, I, just going off my earlier point of one of the great things about this project is that we are stuck in our neighborhood doing a thing that is, yes, a political outreach and agitation project, but it's also just kind of being there and doing a thing. And I think farming would be a really a fun way to do that as well. It's also something that's thankless and, well, it's not thankless. I think, you know.
It's hard work. It would suck to do it for free.
It is hard physical fucking work. Even things like just, I got put to work, not like last summer, picking a bunch of berries for a project. And holy shit, you're just like down there picking all the berries and you wouldn't think it's hard, but it's fucking difficult.
Yeah, it sucks.
Or you gotta, yeah, you gotta rock, you gotta remediate soil, you learn a lot, and it is hard work, even if it is, like, obviously pretty rewarding to eat something you've grown yourself.
Sure. Okay, so even if they were getting paid, then? If they were getting paid, and everyone who was in it, there wasn't a management structure, they were getting paid the same wage, and once everyone was paid and all their expenses were met, profits were rolled into whatever initiative they're trying to keep profits rolling into. I mean, at a certain point, you're just kind of at like a worker-owner cooperative. But if it's truly like a kind of anarchistic, you know, direct democracy sort of thing, I mean, I guess then you get to this greater existential question of like, how can this truly be anarchist? In which case, you know, it probably isn't. And I mean, in my estimation, the only kind of real anarchistic venture would be some kind of like expropriative thing that like actively takes value out of a market, you know. But like, you can only do that so far before you start getting into, you know, actual organized crime and organizing yourselves along the lines of like a mafia style. Like,
well, we're a cooperative mafia organized along anarchist principles. Maybe that's my follow-up to the Zingerman's guy's book.
I mean, realistically, though, like, at that point, too, you just start killing each other over over interpersonal disputes because the stakes are so much higher than, you know, just being asked to leave the squad.
I mean, how close does any info shop come to that? I joke. Yeah.
But, like, you know what I mean? Like, can you add value to the market as an anarchist project and, like, reasonably be anarchist? Obviously, this is the big, like, is there such a thing as an anarchist business? Or, like, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, unless you are doing something that actively is taking value out of the market, like, most of these things are just going to be, like, finding ways to roll profits into propagandistic outfits. So could you do something that isn't either propagandistic, whether it's through the physical presence and space that one offers or the material that it distributes or service it provides, as an anarchistic venture?
I mean, you could if you were doing that as, I think there could be some value in doing that as a project that is simply meant to sustain your own anarchist community, as it were. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one thing. That's immediately what I would think of. But I think people do get into these projects as ways of either some manner of self-enrichment. I mean, I get a small discount on books, which doesn't really enrich me, but it certainly I've taken advantage of it. Plenty of other spaces you can see how they serve their own needs. And I think there's a real value to setting up anarchist projects where you are trying to not just like go out and meet the needs of your community, which sounds like kind of this weird Tolstoyan go out and be among the people thing, but you're doing an anarchist thing in part by sustaining yourself, who are often like sort of not marginalized, but like trying to live in a slightly countercultural way. You are sustaining that. You're sustaining it for other people. And I think that has a lot of value in and of itself. And I wish that was as recognized as something like, say, Food Not Bombs, which also does something cool and valuable. But often gets pushed as the first thing because it fills this cultural need of something adjacent to like charity work and going out and serving your community, which
I mean, I think the anti-economics of Food Not Bombs is what actually personally makes it really interesting to me, is the fact that it was ostensibly like this kind of idea to function entirely on like waste or discard, or you know, function on more or less like the refuse of things, and like in so doing that, like creating like an anti-economic means. I mean, I guess it's hard to say though, because like spoilage and like breakage is an economic function still. It is part of an accounted sorry, I have a cat meowing loudly in the background. She's just kind of yelling throughout the house. But like, you know what I mean? Like the anti-economics of a project like that as an institution are kind of like challenging and interesting to me in a way that like, I think doesn't, like, I know there are Food Not Bombs groups that are still existing as like a kind of, like, they're not just soliciting donations to go buy food to prepare food. Like, which it seems like some organizations are, or not organizations, some Food Not Bombs, like,
chapters, you know,
chapters or whatever the hell they're called, are like definitely more like, if you, you know, subsidize this, we will do this for X people and stuff. They're not like groups of, like, informal groups of people coming together with these like resources that they have, or that they scrounged or whatever, to like assemble something together out of anti-economic necessity or something.
And I think it's a clear measure of scaling. I can completely understand why various Food Not Bombs will have a Venmo or whatever that they toss around social media or solicit donations so that they can buy food, but you'd hope they'd at least like do it in, you know, they do it in bulk, they do their distro, whatever. You kind of can't sustain distroism on a large scale without doing that, I think. And there's probably something to be said for, like, if you were to go to a Costco and buy things in bulk, then just break them down a bit. But then your function is less survive, like this Detroit, this idea of detritus and refuse and kind of
ending waste, like,
you're just, you're doing a different thing, which is fine, but it's a, you know, it's just a different thing.
Yeah, it's just spending money with a better, more pure thought in your heart.
Although some of these projects I see, I wonder if, like,
I mean, we're selling books with a better, more pure thought in our heart than, you know, Barnes & Noble does, per se.
I mean, we have cooler books than Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Well, I guess... Well.
But yeah. I don't know. Anarchist business. Has it ever been attempted? Probably not. We, yeah. Yeah, I'm wondering. I feel like the only way to do... You know, if we're trying to remove value, it should be an anarchist... It should be an anarchist used bookstore, and all the used books come entirely from driving around and, like, emptying little free libraries.
Honestly, I was looking at the stuff that is donated and things. You know, there's all sorts of crap that nobody's ever gonna buy. What you could do is have an anarchist bookstore, but you have everybody make blackout poetry with the donated books that nobody ever wants to read. Mm-hmm. And then you sell those.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Then we would have just a lot of blackout poets that are, you know, that would be introducing something else useless into the economy.
Maybe if we flood the economy with even more useless things, it'll crash. Hasn't happened yet, though.
Is it legal to go around emptying little free libraries and selling them to half-price books?
I mean, I imagine it is. Is it embarrassing, and would I judge someone for it?
I feel like if I was really hard up for money, I'm like, oh, I could empty a few little free libraries and take them up to half price books, and maybe I would get like $20.
I feel like the little free libraries around you must be much better. All that I ever see.
I wouldn't be going to ones around me. I'd be going to the rich neighborhood, and I'd be selling.
Oh, there you go.
I'd be selling all the all my like Robin DiAngelo books.
Okay, well, maybe that's a project we can do sometime, is go to the rich neighborhoods and hit up their little free libraries.
Yeah, we should try that. We should go around to the rich neighborhoods, empty all their little free libraries, and then sell the books. Fuck. I said the name of the books.
That's going to have to come out, won't it?
No, I'm leaving it in. I don't care.
All right. Well, if if your little free library in your ritzy yuppie neighborhood has suddenly been plundered, you know who did it.
Mm-hmm. You do. I'm Vale. That's Larkspur.
I'm Larkspur.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Pra você, eu vou passar o fim dessa semana, meu bem, na areia de um planeta que brilha em mim. Oh, meu amor, procure compreender que eu preciso aprender outras coisas pra voltar. O jeito que estou com você, viajo no espaço e te abraço de lá. Oh, meu amor, procure compreender que eu preciso aprender outras coisas pra contar. I'm sorry.